This is FM 2.0 with the Don, Dean, Stormy, and the Grizz. Forever music.
And we are live, ladies and gentlemen. And here he is, the good old Rick Lang. How are you, Rick?
Good evening, friends.
How are you?
Hey, howdy.
Hey, thanks for having me on. And sorry I picked up the phone instead of plugging into this wonderful format here.
No, you're fine. No problem. I should have my driving cap on so I can match both of you. Look at that. You guys look stellar.
There's a bunch of white hair underneath this cap.
We know that feeling.
Not the only reason why I wear it, but hey, good evening.
Hi. Wow.
The gang's all here.
We're all here except for Grizz, but he's dealing with some car issues, so we'll see if he makes it. But and welcome everybody that's coming in now. This is FM 2.0, Forever Music. Dean, Stormy, myself are here. Grizz, possibly. We'll see. I'm excited to have Rick back. Rick's been on twice, once by himself. We covered his album. And then we had Daryl Mosley on, who is a legend himself. And that was a fun conversation with Daryl and Rick going over songs that they've written together. That was a blast. But now we've got Rick here. Rick, you just, you know, going through again all the things you've been a part of, you know, in bluegrass and gospel. And that's what I love, too. No one really gives bluegrass, I think, its due. And yet it is such a big part of American music history. But it's also complex. And, you know, we always talk about lyrics. Now, your lyrics are very positive. But I know in bluegrass, though, a lot of lyrics can be very dark. Like, you hear happy music, but the lyrics are dark. Do you how do you approach writing in bluegrass? I know you do gospel, too. We'll talk about that. But from a bluegrass perspective, how do you approach it when you're creating?
Well, if you take a look at the history of bluegrass music, a lot of the founding fathers like Bill Monroe and the Stanley Brothers and the Osborne Brothers and Flatten Scruggs, they wrote songs and performed songs back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. The songs that they did were really about their lives and how life was back then. And a lot of it was dark. It was sad. There was struggle, heartache, a lot of hardships. And a lot of the early bluegrass was about that, was about loss, suffering. And that was kind of how it all started. And then there was a lot of gospel music, too. And I think over time, and then just like country music, there was a lot of with music about, you know, running around and going to honky tonks and bars and drinking and stuff like that. There was a lot of that going on. But I think the last, you know, 20 or 30 years or so, there's been new generations of people involved in the music, younger people whose lives were different than the originators of bluegrass music. And they started to write their own songs, and the songs were different because they were about a different place and time. And life has changed so much in the last several decades. A lot of the music today is more positive. And like in my own writing, when I first started to write back in the 80s, I really wanted to write songs like Flatten Scruggs or Bill Monroe. And I wrote a lot of kind of, you know, sad relationship songs and broken hearts and heartbroken hearts type songs. And I did quite a bit of that, actually. A connection to the blues. I was a big fan of the blues. I grew up listening to the blues and soul and R&B music. So I was very familiar with the blues and incorporated it into a lot of my writing, where I connected with loss and hardship in my own life when I was younger. But then after a while, I really kind of gravitated towards more positive content for songs and positive messages to songs. And I think that that accelerated when I get into gospel music. And so a lot of my songs that I've written in the last 10 or 20 years or so have been, had more positive messages. They were kind of a lot of story songs about real life stories and real life experiences, and kind of more hopeful type songs. And I think my approach today is more that and less than the darker side songs. And I think that's been kind of a gradual evolution in my own writing.
Yeah. And, you know, just going through the history of your songs, you know, last time, like the first time I talked to you, we talked about your album. And then with Daryl, we talked about songs you wrote together. But I've never covered with you the songs that, I don't want to say put you on the map, but really affected a lot of people. And that was one of the things, plus I want to talk about, and I figured I'd start with the song that you've released recently, Jesus is the Reason for the Season. You wrote that with Jared Easter, right?
Yes, sir.
Released on November 17th. It's obviously, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory. Jesus is the reason for the season. What was the driving force for creating this song?
Well, Jared Easter has become a good friend of mine in the last 2 or 3 years. He produced a lot of my song demos. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's a nephew of Jeff and Sherry Easter, who are very famous in the Southern gospel world. And his cousin Morgan, who sings on that song, is the daughter of Jeff and Sherry Easter. So I get to know Jared pretty well. And Jared loved my songwriting, and because he's demoed a lot of the songs. And I said one time, you know, we should start writing sometime. You know, ever want to write, that'd be great. And I didn't know if he wrote a lot. And then he said, sure. So we wrote a couple songs, a couple of really good songs that we hope to release someday. And everybody I write with, I always hit on them about writing Christmas songs. I said, if you're going to write with Rick, we have to write at least one Christmas song. So, so that's kind of the deal. If we're going to write together, we got to have one in the books. So last summer, I said, well, let's go ahead and write it now. And what do you want to write about? And it was his idea to write about, well, sometimes the aspect of Christmas about the birth of Jesus gets kind of lost in the shuffle with all the busyness of this, of Christmas and the Christmas rush and the material things about Christmas. Sometimes that just gets lost or forgotten or overlooked. And he said, yeah, we really need to, let's write a song about focusing on that, that that is the reason Christmas came to be. I said, absolutely. So he came up with the idea and came up with the title, and we wrote the song one summer afternoon. And we got down and listened to it, and we really liked it. And I said, you know, we should do something with this. So we could send it out to see if some band would record it, artist would record it, or, you know, he's a great producer. He's got his own studio. His cousin Morgan's a good singer. I said, well, what if we recorded it and released it ourselves as a Jared Easter Rick Lang thing, and go ahead and introduce that song to the world? So he was totally up for it. So we recorded it. Morgan sang on it, and she is one of the most dynamic female vocalists I've ever heard. A lot of people aren't familiar with her, but man, she is as good as anybody I know. And so she sang lead on it. And then on the track, which is something we hadn't tried before, we got Rob Ikes, who's a Grammy-winning dobro player. He's one of the best in the world. Jared got him to play on it. So sometimes when you get somebody to play in a song, they'll play parts. You know, they'll do a lead on a song, right, and do a few fills and swap it off with some other instrument. But he went and played the song through without stopping. He played it from beginning to end. His dobro playing permeated the whole song. And Jared called me up and he said, "This is so good. We should just feature his dobro playing." That's what you're going to hear. So when you listen to it, it's just a splendid performance on the dobro, coupled with a phenomenal vocal performance that was very heartfelt and emotional. And we both loved the way it turned out. And said, "Yeah, man, we have to release this." And I got together with Penny McDaniel, who's done helped me with a lot of promotion, and we made a plan to release it to the world, because I said, the world needs to hear this song. And then after the song got released, I said, what if we had a little video made of it? So Penny helped create a lyric video, mm-hmm. and with images that kind of tied into the lyrics of the song as it went through, and it came out great. So we released that too. And
good.
It's been a fun journey.
Yeah, I love a dobro. Love them.
They are great. And it's interesting. First of all, you wrote a Christmas song in the summer, which I think is always interesting.
Yeah.
And that it's always fascinating to me that every year there'll be a slew of new Christmas songs. Like, it never runs out. Or somebody's recording a Christmas song. It's like it'll never be a point, I don't think, where everybody will stop writing a Christmas song, or at least recording one, right?
I think it's becoming more popular. I mean, I've been writing Christmas songs for over 20 years, and up till 2 or 3 years ago, I never heard bluegrass artists release original Christmas songs very much. So the last 2 or 3 years, I started pitching songs around, and I've had major artists record my songs and release them. Last year was the biggest year I had. I had several cuts. And then after that, it's not like an everybody jumped on the bus thing, but all of a sudden there were just a lot of Christmas releases, a lot of new music. And I noticed this year there's several new Christmas releases in the bluegrass world, which I think is fantastic. I think there's just been a new enthusiasm and interest in writing and releasing Christmas songs, which is everybody.
Well, I know Stormy loves Christmas music. That's for sure.
Rick, if I could back up for a moment, something you had mentioned earlier, I'd love to get your thoughts on. So you were talking about your love for the blues and how you'd work the blues into bluegrass. I'd done a feature on Strike TV a couple months ago where I was focusing in on, for lack of a better term, progressive bluegrass bands, a lot of the younger bands that are bringing other elements of genres into the music, Steven Seagal's Thunder and Rain, Dead South, excuse me. And one of the questions that I'd ask them was how they felt they were being received in the larger bluegrass community. Is the community kind of very, very pure here? This is the way that we want the music to be, or were they being embraced? And it felt like what they were saying is it's kind of a mix. So I was kind of curious what your thoughts are on these younger bands that are starting to incorporate different elements of genres into bluegrass. And then by doing that, it seems like it's also introducing the genre to a larger audience or to an audience that maybe hadn't listened to bluegrass to begin with.
Yeah, that's a very good question and a very good valid point. I think in the past 10 years or so, there's a lot of contemporary bands, kind of jam bluegrass bands, and who appeal to a broader audience. And a lot of them are playing at these big festivals to tens of thousands of people in Telluride and all over the country and being well received. And the audiences a lot of them are playing for are not bluegrass audiences. It's just people who just like good music. And I think that they're all these progressive bands that are really talented are increasing the audience for bluegrass, helping to increase its popularity. It's all good for bluegrass. Now, there are purists in bluegrass who like traditional old-timey music, which is fine, and that's one aspect of it. However, if nothing changed, the music wouldn't grow if that's all there was, because music has to change and evolve to grow. It's like the Beatles back in the 60s. Look how the Beatles evolved and grew their music and grew their audience and became had a broader brush to the music and a lot of diversity to what they presented to their audience. It's sort of the same thing. And I think a lot of these younger bands, like I hear a song on the radio that some young band of kids in their 20s are doing, and I'm thinking some of those songs they're playing that they love are the songs their parents loved. So they're playing songs that they heard their parents play in their homes, which are different than what people heard played in their homes 50 years ago. So I'm just hearing a lot of bluegrass takes of songs that were kind of pop contemporary songs or whatever, and doing kind of putting their own spin on them, which I think is phenomenal. So there's a lot of freshness, there's a lot of newness out there. There are no boundaries. I mean, a lot of people in this day and age just respect and love good music, no matter what it is, no matter what style it is. If it's good music is good music. And I think bluegrass is one of the few musics that still its popularity is growing faster than other musics. And even though it's growing, one thing I do feel about bluegrass, if I take a look back when I first got interested in the 80s compared to today, yeah, there's a lot of progressive bluegrass out there, but there's still a lot of bands are going back to playing traditional songs, maybe with a little more contemporary flair. But bluegrass has not lost its roots. There's a lot of musics who have lost their roots, and their sound is not cognizant of what it used to be, like country music. Country music today is not like when Buck Owens played and all these people who wrote these great songs played. It is not that. So it's lost its core sound, and what people are hearing is not even close to what it was when it really evolved. And to me, in those great days when all those wonderful songs, when those timeless songs were written and sung that are going to be around forever, bluegrass hasn't lost that. People go off on a tangent and play something different, but they'll always come back to playing the old songs, and it always keeps coming back to its roots. So I guess the main thing to me, it really hasn't lost its identity as a music. Matter of fact, it's more and more popular. Tons of country artists are recording bluegrass songs, bluegrass albums. Alan Jackson just recorded one. Willie Nelson just recorded one. Dierks Bentley, you name it.
I did the closing point I had made on my documentary, and I've got a TikTok viewer that left a comment I'll share here in a second, was I actually think bluegrass could very well be the most vibrant of the genres when you take into account the jams. There's an interview with John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin talking about he showed up at Merlefest back in the early 2000s because he wanted to become a true bluegrass mandolin player. And in doing the research, that's something I heard over and over again from a lot of these young bands as they got into it, because they were able to go to a jam, participate with the community, and then that set them on their path. So I think it's because of those jams, it makes it a very vibrant genre. Now, A Real Lulu, one of the TikTok viewers, said that they believe that the age of gatekeeping is over, which is what's allowing the music to continue to expand.
Yeah, I think you're right on there. I think a lot of musicians and artists in different music realize that the best musicians are in the bluegrass field. I mean, the bluegrass musician, the quality of the musicianship is just stellar. And when a lot of artists are looking for people to play in their bands and perform, they go to the bluegrass world because that's where the great musicians are. And a lot of these musicians are starting out in their teens, like Wyatt Ellis, this new phenomenon, this kid who's just amazing. He's only 14. He's got songs on XM radio now. He's a phenomenon, sort of like Bela Fleck when he was young, like that. And it's just the quality of the music's amazing. The quality of the musicianship's amazing. There's new talented writers coming into the scene all the time. And I don't think the music's ever been healthier than it is now in the bluegrass world. I just am fortunate to be part of it. I always felt this is my home where I belong, that I can plug in and write music that's going to be a good fit for the bluegrass audience. And I just feel like I can be myself when I write, and whatever I write is just going to be the kind of songs that people will resonate with. So I feel very fortunate for that.
Yeah. I mean, I thought you said something very poignant, and that is genres that lost their identity. You're absolutely right about country itself. I mean, I don't even know what it is anymore. I mean, I actually talked to somebody, his name's Colt Barber. I had him on the show a couple of years ago, and he said he went to Nashville, and he's very outlaw type country. He says when he went to labels, they told him he was too country to be an artist, too country,
right?
You know, and in Nashville, and you go, what's going on? That's what I mean. Like, it's lost its whole identity. It used to be that was the whole thing, is, you know, outlaw was like that real raw country thing, and it's
with an edge to it, you know.
You know, a Cowboy's Wings on TikTok made a good point here. I keep scrolling past it, but essentially, what they were saying is that it's the access to the information of the information age, which is also exposing people to more genres, more styles. That's probably having an impact here, which is exactly when I was talking to Steven Seagals. They're out of where are they? They're Finnish. I think they're out of Finland. And, you know, so there's a bluegrass band coming out of Europe, and they were talking about how it's really growing in France right now. So, again, it's that exposure to, you know, the information age.
Did bluegrass start in Kentucky? Is that why it's called bluegrass?
Yeah, it started in Appalachia. The Bill Monroe is really kind of the
pioneer of it.
The founder and people and Stanley Brothers there's several other bands and artists who around at that time kind of developed the core sound of bluegrass, which was kind of evolved from their influences, including the blues. And if you listen to a lot of Bill Monroe's early songs, you can tell that he had a heavy blues influence. And I think that the blues influence in the song and the bluesy notes and those seventh chords, that it really was very attractive to me, including in gospel music. He would write gospel songs that had a modal kind of sound or a bluesy kind of sound. And I really felt attracted to that, to that part of the music where you had that bluesy kind of dark, bluesy, edgy element to it. And he came out of it right out of the gate with that. And I think part of it's because of my own early influences. Some of that was already established in bluegrass music when I plugged into it. So like my first major bluegrass cut back in 1991 was with a band called the Lonesome River Band, who was really hot at the time. And they recorded my first edgy, bluesy gospel tune called Listen to the Word of God, and it became a hit song. And I realized then, like, I want to do more songs like that.
And when something becomes a hit, yeah, you're like, oh, I got the bit by the bug.
So, you know, kind of combining gospel and the blues and kind of have that some sort of mood and kind of setting. It's kind of a bluesy, edgy setting for the song. I just find that attractive and fun to work on.
Lonesome River, were they out of Virginia?
Yeah, they were out of Ferrum, Virginia.
Yes, I remember. I actually recorded a demo at their studio back in 91. Yeah, I think it was 91.
Doobie Shea Studios.
Yes, yep.
With Tim Austin down in Ferrum, Virginia. And that, that record they put out then that I got cut on, it was awarded the IBMA Album of the Year. So, like, I thought, God, maybe I could become a songwriter. This is amazing.
Yeah, that'll do it, right? Look at it. It's a small world over here.
I know. Go figure. Wow.
Almighty. Well, how about this, Rick, in closing here, why don't we play your latest gospel song? It's a Christmas song. This would fall under gospel, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And this is Jesus is the reason for the season. And just listen to the music, too. It's just beautiful. And you heard the – what was the name of the vocalist again?
The vocalist is Morgan Easter.
Morgan Easter, right, Morgan.
And the dobro player is Rob Ikes. And Rob, you just listen to his dobro work throughout the whole thing. It just blows me away. It's stellar. It's a masterpiece because he doesn't stop playing. What you hear throughout is a constant stream of dobro throughout the whole song.
Beautiful. I listened to it.
I never heard anybody do that before. Have one featured instrument throughout the entire song, but it just shows he's a world-class musician, basically.
All right. Well, now everyone should get excited. I got to hit mute on you, Rick, so it doesn't echo. And here we go. This is the song we've been talking about. It's available. Get you in the spirit for the holiday season. Jesus is the reason for the season. Our guest is Rick Lang, won many awards, highly acclaimed songwriter in the bluegrass and gospel world. Go look him up. You will be blown away by all the things he's been a part of. Over 100 songs to his credit. Here is one right here, and we're going to listen to it now. That little chord change in there, if you want to talk about goosebumps, I just got again. The way things hit you, that was beautiful, Rick.
Oh, thanks. I just feel lucky to be surrounded by such talented people who can take a song and just take it to a whole other level. And I've always had this kind of approach towards life. Before I became a full-time songwriter, I was in the lumber industry, and we had a successful company. And I learned in running that business that, you know, you're as good as the people you surround yourself with. So, yeah, I had a vision for our lumber company. I have a vision for my music, but the only way it's going to be realized is surrounding yourself with the right people and people who can help you realize that vision. And, I'm just a part of it. And, it's rewarding when every people jump on board and take your art and just take it to a whole other level. It's the best.
Yeah. So I'm surrounding myself with Stormy and Dean. Same reason.
And I surround myself with Don and Stormy.
It's the truth. We all compliment each other. Well.
You're all living the dream there.
We are.
Hey, I just got to say, you're right. That dobro was beautiful.
Unbelievable. And then when those harmonies kick in, Rick, those gorgeous harmonies in there, oh my God.
Yeah, that's my kind of music. I think, you know, I should say this. To me, what great music does, great music makes you feel something when you hear it. And the goal as a writer is to try to write songs that make you feel something when you hear it and get people to sing and play on it that kind of can follow that through and make you feel something when you hear it, some emotion. That's always the goal.
So it happened off the top of your head. Was that a tricone dobro he played? or a standard?
No idea.
Because the way it was resonating, I love a dobro. It was beautiful. Wow.
That's one of the best dobro performances I've ever heard on our song. Like, holy cow.
Yeah, that was beautiful, man. Absolutely beautiful. Well,
hey, one more time. I've got somebody here on TikTok asking for the vocalist name again.
Morgan Easter, and she's married. So her married name is Smith. So it's Morgan Easter Smith. And she is the daughter of Jeff and Sherry Easter, who are, you know, like superstars in the Southern gospel world. And she is one of my favorite female vocalists in music right now. And we try to put her on. We're going to do more with her because I want the world to hear her voice, more people to hear her voice.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Look at that. Well, Rick, always an honor to have you. Keep up the good work. Well, I'll be back again soon when you got more music out.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be on the program, and I appreciate your interest in my songwriting and music. It means more to me than you'll ever know. I just feel like songwriting is my calling, and I didn't realize that for a long time, but this is what I was meant to do, meant to write songs to share with the world. And as long as God gives me life, I'm going to do it as long as I can. It's the support of folks like you who encourage me, inspire me and support me that makes me want to get up every day and write more.
Look at that.
Thank you for that.
Hey, before you go, you may already know this, but just for everybody else. So Peter Wolf of Jay Giles Band, he's got an album out there. He actually had, I think it was the Lonesome River Band backing him on it. Doing bluegrass versions of some of the Jay Giles.
Small world.
It is so cool. It's great. You got to check it out.
I'll definitely check it out.
That's it. Rick, thank you, man.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas, Rick. Have a good one.
You too. And let's do this again.
Absolutely.
So much fun.
Thank you. Yeah. So it goes fast, doesn't it, for a half hour?
Yes.
All right. Well, have a great night, man.
You too. Take care.
Rick Lang, everybody.